You're listening to the Yes Music Podcast, one fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. Welcome to episode 6 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Remember that if you're listening before the end of November 2011, you can vote for the Yes Music Podcast in the European Podcast Awards at bit.ly/voteYMP. That would be very kind of you if you can do that. Other ways to get involved, as usual, the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe via RSS, via iTunes. And you can also email the show, show@yesmusicpodcast.com. Read the blog posts, the show notes, and add your own comments. This week, Donnie Taylor answered one of the questions I asked in last week's episode about Close to the Edge being the first whole side track. Actually, he says that In Agada da Vida by Iron Butterfly was released in 1968 and lasts all of side B of the album. He's not sure that this was the first, but clearly predates Close to the Edge. So thanks, Donnie, for that information. I've listened to the track myself on YouTube, and it's quite something. I also followed the YouTube-suggested link to the Slayer cover version, which is interesting. I don't want to upset any Slayer fans, so I'll put that link in the show notes as well, and you can make up your own minds about that. The show is at Yes Music Podcast on Twitter. And finally, you can leave a voicemail message, and please do, and then you can appear on the show yourself by calling 0844 579 6949 and using the mailbox number 39417. Look out for the very first Yes Music Podcast interview special, which is coming soon, featuring Mike Murphy with some fascinating insights into the guitarists of Yes, their style, what makes them unique. I've also got some more interviews lined up, and the plan is to continue with the weekly studio album episodes and intersperse these with interview specials. So if you have a Yes story you'd like to share, get in touch, and I'll do an interview with you. So this week's featured album is the perennially controversial Tales from Topographic Oceans from January 1974, as I discovered by reading the sleeve notes today, and not 1973 as I thought. It's a double album, so I'm going to make this a double episode over 2 weeks, covering the first two sides this week and the other two sides next week. If last week's Close to the Edge album is a definitive prog rock album, then Tales must be one of a handful of definitive concept albums. Again, it's Roger Dean artwork on the cover, and this is probably his most well-known album cover, and probably prog rock's most well-known album cover as well. You've probably heard the story of his cats getting onto the still wet artwork for the cover, and Roger Dean having to try and disguise their footprints with stars. If you've never noticed that, have a look. The artwork perfectly complements the concept of this album, with its South American-looking temple in the distance and some fish which appear to be swimming through the air on the back cover. I personally can't see much connection with the previous covers, but maybe I'm just not on the right wavelength for this. The album itself is remarkable for the sheer audacity of producing a double album with a consistent concept over the four sides. It's interesting to compare it with TV programmes, which are given feature films. Can the successful formula from the TV programme be transferred into a longer format without losing the aspects which made the original so successful? With Yes albums, the songs have been moving to longer and longer forms, as we have seen, ending up with Close to the Edge taking up a whole side on the album of the same name. The subject matter of this album captures the early 70s obsession with mystical Eastern philosophy. Anderson's lengthy sleeve notes describe how the album concept came about. It's very biographical. The four sides are based on four parts of the Shastric scriptures, four interlocking pieces of music, says Anderson, is how he wanted it to be. We will see how this is translated into the music. The personnel on this album obviously sees another huge change, with the departure of the original drummer, Bill Bruford, and the arrival of Alan White, a different drummer with a very different style, as we will see. So side one of the album, The Revealing Science of God, Dance of the Dawn. And here's what Anderson says in the sleeve note description of this side. First movement, Srutis. The Revealing Science of God can be seen as an ever-opening flower in which simple truths emerge, examining the complexities and magic of the past, and how we should not forget the song that has been left to us to hear. The knowledge of God is a search, constant and clear. It's interesting to note that the move towards a classical music structure even includes referring to the parts of tales as movements, just like a symphony. The opening of the piece is very unusual, with Anderson chanting, with only a small variation in pitch. I think this is meant to evoke meditative practices of this kind of spirituality. Anderson gets through a lot of text in this opening, and in order to get through this amount of lyrics in a short space of time, Anderson is having to solve the same problem as others before him in a similar way. In classical opera, there's often the need to tell the story in lengthy passages of text. Rather than stop the music and have the actors speak the lines, composers developed a technique called recitative. Early on in the history of opera, this was very much like what Anderson is doing here, a quiet, simple accompaniment with lyrics principally on one or two notes, with shifts in pitch towards the ends of phrases. There's also an interesting parallel in church choral traditions, particularly of the Roman Catholic Church, and in a different way the Greek Orthodox Church, where a lot of the text of services are intoned by the priest. The technique used is quite similar to this passage on tales, and there are set rules on how to end phrases, depending on the pattern of syllables. But anyway, back to the Yes music. Gradually more vocal parts come in, as well as instrumental parts, and the whole thing crescendos and moves towards another classic Yes moment, when Squire and Wakeman introduce the startling and deeply moving theme, which seems like an incredible release of tension after the previous build-up. Alan White's heavier style comes through here, giving a different driving, solid backbone to the theme than Bruford would have done, perhaps. It's a memorable hook, again like the ones we mentioned last week on Close to the Edge, with Howe and Wakeman in between trading elaborate improvised-sounding passages. When the beautiful vocal harmonies of Talk to the Sunlight Caller and then the verses come in, listen to the instrumentation. It's one of the most powerfully immersive passages of all Yes music for me. All the instruments are interweaving beautifully underneath the strong yet subtle vocal line. So those drum parts then, they're undeniably simpler than those which Bruford might have contributed, but they are entirely consistent, I think, with the feel of the music, and there's no sense in which Alan White misinterprets the feel. It's just accomplished in his style rather than trying to copy Bruford's. The texture and mood changes at the starlight movement, and we have a reappearance of those short vocal phrases we've noted before. This is a short section of more agitated-sounding music before the band moves seamlessly into a quiet passage of repeated melodic lines before the main theme reappears, but calmly this time with Howe playing a bluesy solo above washes of keyboard. Yet another section enters with They Move Fast, and another hook makes an appearance. Getting Over Overhanging Trees, it's a combination of catchy tunes in loose verse-chorus structure. We're then back to the more disconcerting mood for a short time, followed by a Howe solo passage of initially heroic-sounding guitar work, but this is followed soon after by one of the passages which I think Tales detractors probably point out as less successful. The guitar moves into a strange tonality for an extended section, with many changes of mood. I think this is where some lose interest in this first side. There are so many ideas surfacing without being fully developed that it doesn't seem to be a coherent passage in the same way as the rest. Don't get me wrong, I love the melody and feel when Anderson comes in with and through the rhythm of moving slowly. It's a great passage for me and a great effect when the previous theme comes back as echoes. But again, there are a couple of passages which don't quite flow as they might. Chris Squire, I think, said in later years that he didn't think anyone should be asked to listen to the whole of Tales. There are fantastic moments, particularly with Wakeman racing around the keyboard in one of his most dramatic solo passages, but maybe it's all just too complex. Perhaps some more development of fewer ideas would have been more effective. As I said, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I love the track. I'm just trying to be objective. It's got some of the most fantastic Yes moments of all time. When Anderson sings What Happened to the Song, it's spine-tingling prog rock genius. Maybe it's even more effective after the preceding complexity. There's a semi-chanting section again at the end, and it's a really effective ending to side one out of four. It's remarkable to think this is only a quarter of the album. I'm emotionally drained already. So side two then, called The Remembering, High the Memory. And again, here's what Anderson says. Second movement, Suritis, the remembering. All our thoughts, impressions, knowledge, fears have been developed for millions of years. What we can relate to is our own past, our own life, our own history. Here it is especially Rick's keyboards which bring alive the ebb and flow and depth of our mind's eye, the topographic ocean. Hopefully we should appreciate that given points in time are not so significant as the nature of what is impressed on the mind and how it is retained and used. So this piece, I think, has many fewer ideas than side one. It's a fairly consistently medium-paced song for more than 8 minutes. Different sections there are, but much more of a feeling of a simple structure. Repeating vocal lines create another mystical chant-like meditative feel, with passages of high-pitched melody making a good contrast. There is suspension of the pulse and quite a bit of cymbal washes, for example, but the main chant-like ideas and themes reappear quite a few times. In the context of the whole album, it's a worthwhile section, but maybe there are too few ideas this time, which have been stretched out too far here. Once again, it's great music for Yes fans, but I wonder how new listeners feel about it. There's less to capture their attention, it needs more work to appreciate it, maybe. In the passages where a recognisable hook appears, it disappears just as quickly. There's a lovely Wakeman theme around the 8 minutes mark if you're still listening by then, and I hope you are, because the tempo picks up as Howe brings in acoustic guitar beneath Anderson singing "Don the Cap and Close Your Eyes." Imagine all the glorious challenge in a great passage which provides a great contrast to what precedes it. It's a jaunty little song with a great arrangement. Distant suns will we reach? Here we have short phrases again in typical style. A lovely Howe solo brings us to an up-tempo passage, with some great ensemble playing supporting a great melody, as Anderson sings about Relayer. Of course, that's the next album, so interesting to see the word used here. A bit too soon for me, the slow mood returns, but only temporarily. I would ask if it's really necessary to split it up like this. It feels a bit like padding. Anyway, the recap of the Relayer section is great, and leads to a recap of previous material now at breakneck speed, with Squire's bass pushing the band on and on. There are echoes of the America-type bassline here. It's another great ensemble section with strong vocal line again, before yet another slower-moving passage. Again, it feels a bit broken up despite some amazingly creative Wakeman keyboard effects and inventive Howe moments. Through those washes of sound, eventually there come new strong and triumphant song-like sections, interspersed with instrumental sections, which build with Squire's ascending bass line to reveal one of the original themes recapped and fading out to finish. As I said, I think this side rewards repeated listening. I'm sure it's quite difficult for someone listening to this for the first time to come to terms with the multitude of different sections and the complexity of the piece. Maybe the scale is just too grand for some. We're only halfway through the album and it takes a lot of dedication to get a real understanding of the whole work, which is possibly why this album is not as universally liked as Fragile or Close to the Edge. Perhaps it's a bit like a book by Tolstoy or an opera by Wagner. You need to take the time to understand, to appreciate fully the rewards it brings. And I think there are many rewards to be found in Tales, but maybe it doesn't fit in with the current mindset of music listeners of the iTunes generation, where the short, downloaded single track is the currency, rather than the grand work of art, which is the province of albums like Tales from Topographic Oceans. So that's about it for part one this week. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. Next week we will deal with the other two sides of Tales from Topographic Oceans. So your homework is to listen carefully, if you can, please, to sides 3 and 4, and also get involved at www.yesmusicpodcast.com, by following the show on Twitter at yesmusicpodcast, by sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, or leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. If you can, please vote for the Yes Music Podcast in the European Podcast Awards at bit.ly/voteYMP. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.